Uncle Joe here smoking a fucking joint of death, one of these cannolis from Urban Trees. They'll kill you. They're dipped in formaldehyde, fucking angel dust, fucking bird's piss from the Molly. You got everything in these fucking things. I'm celebrating Sober October. Greetings from Podcastville. The church of what's happening now is brought to you by my bookie. Listen, if you found the yardstick on the street, would you pick it up or would you keep walking? Of course you'd fucking pick it up. Why would you fucking, why would you keep picking winners and not betting them? All fucking week you knew San Francisco was going to beat the Rams. But yesterday you said, I'm not going to bet because I'm a pussy and the bookmaker. Now this is what you get. San Francisco went in there and bitch-slacked them. If you're going to fucking bet, you got to go to my bookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. Listen, cut the shit. It's fucking Tuesday morning. Start your week with a bang. Right now, go to mybookie.ag. They double your first deposit. Use promo code CHURCH to get 100% bonus on your initial deposit up to $1,000. What the fuck are you waiting for? Go to mybookie.ag today. Not tomorrow. Not fucking Thursday. Today. That's mybookie. Grab a pen because I know you're a dumb fuck. MyBookie.ag. And don't forget to use promo code CHURCH when you're creating your account to claim the bonus. All right, listen. You play, you win, you get paid. The Church of What Happened Now would also love to welcome Athletic Greens. Listen, Athletic Greens is an awesome supplement that gives you big dick swinging energy. If you're not starting your day off with a blast of vitamins, you already lost. Go back to bed, cocksucker. But if you want to feel tip-top Magoo and you want those nuts to be filled with fucking juju juice, you got to let Athletic Greens do the dirty work. They got you covered over five critical areas: health, energy, immunity, gut health, and hormonal support. Who takes care of you like that? Nobody, cocksucker. So do me a favor. The church family gets a special offer. We're going to give you 20 free travel packs valued at $79 with your first-time purchase. Jump over to athleticgreens.com/church and get your travel packs today. That's athleticgreens.com. Listen, Athletic Greens, fucking tremendous. Kick this motherfucking mule, Blee. It's Tuesday morning. I got to get you out of bed. A little fucking Metallica. It's all over. I feel like stabbing a motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? I had some garlic pills. I'm farting up fucking goat blood. But it's Tuesday, motherfuckers. You wanted me, you got me. Here you go. What are you, fucking nuts or what? Uncle Joey coming at you on a Tuesday fucking morning. You thought I forgot about you. It's the day the devil got buried at sea, motherfucker. What? Give it to me. One time. I swear to God, you know, I play this song like third on my morning rotation every day for the last year and a half.
It's fantastic.
It gets me out of bed. It makes me want to stab a motherfucker when I'm drinking coffee. That second cup of coffee, this shit comes on and I go, fucking Ubats. I just sit there and think of all the motherfuckers that are going down tonight. Everybody I got to call. I'm going to call them at 8 a.m. Fuck 9:01. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's going to call at 8 while they're driving to the location. I catch them on the phone. Put that Bluetooth on, bitch. Joey D is here. Steve Simone here. And the Christ Killer here. It's casual fucking Tuesday. It's Taco Tuesday, Tranny Tuesday in some streets, whatever Tuesday you want it to be. You know what I'm saying? It's your fucking Tuesday. That's what I'm trying to say. Number one, I want to thank everybody who came out to the shows at the Uptown Theater on Friday night. You were fucking sensational. And then Denver, Jesus fucking Christ. At the Paramount, you guys were tremendous. You touched my heart. You know, I left there 24 years ago in a car with fucking $8 in quarters. And there I was, you know. So in a way, I lost the battle, but I won the war 24 years later. I ended up getting what I wanted, you know.
That's
I never,
awesome.
In my wildest imagination. Some of the old comics I used to do spots came out.
Wow.
And we were talking about what we used to do, like how our open mic scene was. And Steve Simone, we brought up something that I had forgotten about. In those days, you know, I would look at my notebook and I knew something wasn't right because I would only have like 16, 17 spots a month.
Okay.
I would drive to fucking Wyoming to do spots. And all I would get was 16, four spots a week.
Wow.
Friday and Saturday, you were mort.
Yep.
You did the spots at the three comedy clubs and Comedy Works wasn't going to give you a spot. So you had McKelvey's or Wits End. Wits End, you'd rather put a gun in your mouth than do a guest spot there. Especially the late show on a Friday. It was a morgue. And the other club was like Mensa Mort. And he was good to me. I'm not going to lie. He would give me guest spots. But usually it was one spot and then we hung out and celebrated.
Yep.
But I heard about people doing multiple spots. And it intrigued me. So I said, wait a second. The hot thing in those days was line dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And we followed a line dancing class on Sundays.
You would do comedy after line dancing?
In fucking Arvada at some like country western. It was rough. And the whole place would disappear. Billy Ray Cyrus was on. Everybody's dancing.
Yep.
All of a sudden, MC would go in 5 minutes, comedy stuff.
Oh, God.
And you would see the whole room clear up. Nothing better for your open mic ego. But what we did that was big time, that I fucking laughed my ass off on the plane yesterday, was we used to crash karaoke bars.
Yeah.
Karaoke was huge in 93 and 94. And open poetry readings were big in 93 and 94. The more you went away from Boulder, the looser they got.
Gotcha.
But in Boulder, people were very serious. White people were very serious about poetry.
Oh, yeah, all those rich kids.
They had a couple bars that did poetry night and mostly cafes. This is way before Starbucks. This is no Starbucks. Boulder had the coffee houses with the couches and the books. And Boulder was called Penny Lane. And it was tremendous. And I was in halfway house with an old fucking forger. He was an old Jew from New York.
Oh my gosh.
From the old school Hendrix at the Fillmore, that type of hippie.
Wow.
He still had the long hair. It was 91. I met him when I was 27. He was already 55, a dog. He had a banging hot little 26-year-old chick with blue eyes. She was beautiful. She never wore a bra. She had hair on her armpits. She was a barista.
Hippie.
So she ran the poetry reading. Guess what? On Friday and Saturday, stayed open 24 hours. And the poetry reading started at 11. So when I got into comedy, I wasn't even involved really in the probation system anymore. But I was still dear friends with him.
Okay.
But he was too old to go out at night. So he would always go, I'm kind of scared that she's down there alone at this coffee shop. And I'd go, listen, you know, tell her to put me on the poetry readings. And I would go down there, sign up for number fucking 40.
Yeah.
And I'd get there early and I'd get a notebook out and write. And then she would slip me into the poetry readings. And they wouldn't laugh, really. I would get a couple giggles, like.
Wait, you... They were doing their, like, poetry, and you would just go up and do a stand-up set.
Yeah, coming up to the stage next, Joey Diaz. And I would go up and go, you ever watch a Godzilla movie? You know, and I would just start fucking ranting. And they would be looking at me like, that's not poetry, guy. They never said nothing to me because she ran it.
Gotcha.
But the more you went outside of Boulder, they got looser and looser. There was one in particular right by 4th and Thornton. There was a mall there.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go to that mall a lot because they used to sell cars in Thornton. So when you were bored, you took one of the cars in the lot. You went to the mall. You went to Sparrow's.
Yeah. You know, got a slice, walked around.
You did all that craziness and shit. And around the block from that mall was a coffee shop. That guy hated when we did comedy. So we would wait. Like, he would start the show at like 8,
uh-huh.
And then he would leave. He was the owner. He would sit there till 9. We knew the thing ran till 10, and we would catch different baristas. If they didn't know us, hi, how are you? We'd like to sign up for car. He wants a nut vanilla, you know, latte, because you couldn't just get black coffee. They knew you were crazy. If you didn't get one of their green tea fucking mixtures, then they go, oh, you like green tea? Oh, my God, I drink the orchid milk. You know, they started with that bullshit.
Yeah.
And then they would let you up, and then they would go, you can't, you're not allowed here no more. That guy threw us out 10 times. I remember one time, like, we grabbed each other. Like, he's like, I'm not going to tell you again to stay out here with your fucking R-rated jokes. I kept telling him, I got my rights, motherfucker. You know, and I was doing it. Now I was just doing it to break his balls.
Now you're just torturing him. It's not even comedy anymore.
Because there were people who came up to me, like men and women.
They must have loved
it. I remember one woman in particular who came up to me, and she goes, I don't know what your name is. You killed me tonight. The crowd didn't know what to think. I've never seen that reaction to a person. But you can't come here no more. Because somebody's going to complain. And I shook her hand. She gave me like a kiss. She gave me a free coffee.
Yeah, she was cool.
I don't mind that.
Yeah. That's cool.
I can take.
Yeah.
I just couldn't take the people who were just playing out rude to me, like that dude.
Yeah.
So we would go there. Like I was telling somebody yesterday. Then we started tag teaming karaoke joints.
You would do stand up at karaoke?
And they really get pissed. If you want to piss somebody off when they're waiting, because there's people who really get into
karaoke. Oh, they
take
it serious.
They got great voices. They just made a wrong turn. They go up there. There's duos that sing like Kenny Rogers and shit like that. There's no, you know, they sing Endless Love.
Yeah.
So I still remember like going there with the intention, like you knew there was going to be a problem. So, all right. So there's 30 people signed up for the karaoke. So obviously you're already tanked. You got a gram of blow in your pocket. You're just taking a chance. So Lee would be number 28. Joey Diaz would be 32. And Steve Simone would be 35. We wait for Lee. Lee would go up there, and the song would be playing. In my eyes, there I see nobody else but you. You know, that like little background thing.
Yeah.
And the big screen. You're up there. Hey, did I ever tell you about Godzilla in New Jersey? And they're just looking at you.
Wow.
And the music and the words are coming up on the screen, but you're doing stand-up. And the DJ would just look at you like, you know, like he would like, look at
him. Supposed to say those words, yes.
So if Lee got away with it, the DJ would go, all right, give Lee Syatt a round of applause, right? Then we go, all right, now number 32 is me. So we let two singers go up.
Yep.
And they would sing their fucking bullshit. And then they would get off and hug each other. Coming to the stage, Joey Diaz. And I would go up there, oh, let me talk to you about sucking your dick and all this shit. And then I would push the envelope even farther. So if I got, sometimes they would just put the music on loud or scratch the thing.
Yo, would the guy ever try to sing over you?
Get off.
Yeah.
No vulgar material on the stage.
Right.
Get off. And we would just go to another karaoke place. Now you would be first.
Switch the order up, and so everybody got a set in.
And Lee would go up second. And by the time they didn't say nothing to Lee, then I would go up third.
Oh, that's great.
We did
great.
That 1,000 times.
How many spots do you think you got from that?
It was always like you. It wasn't a spot. You were going to get tortured. There weren't even. It let me know about prep. It let me know the different levels of comedy.
Okay.
It lets you know that, okay, when you go to a bar and do stand up, they're not there to see you.
Right.
They're there to watch the hockey game and to have a few drinks.
Yep.
Monday night's dart night.
Yep.
Tuesday night's girls' night. Wednesday night's comedy night. Thursday night's cocaine night. And Friday night is kill yourself, do whatever the fuck you want. And they're not really prepared for comedy psychologically.
Yeah.
Okay. When I go on comedystore.com and I look at the schedule and I buy tickets and I buy two tickets,
I'm a whole different mindset.
I'm getting prepared psychologically to go to the show.
I completely agree. Yep.
You put the CD on. You put, you know, Bert Kreischer CD or Theo Von.
All that
CD
stuff makes a difference. All of it makes it,
So you always, as a comic, you also have to study the psychology of people.
Yeah.
I learned that in those rooms that if you got one laugh, you won.
Yeah.
Even, you know, what's the song? 3 minutes?
Yeah.
If you got one laugh at the minute mark, you won. Some people, get the fuck off.
Right.
Like I said to you, karaoke is very serious to some people at the time.
Oh, still. Like, I won't even try to sing karaoke because I'm terrible, and some people take that as an offense.
Lee and I have a mutual friend that takes his karaoke seriously. And every year on his birthday, he has a karaoke
birthday party.
And he posts it up, and he'll tell you he's actually singing Living on a Prayer.
Bon Jovi.
Like, there are people who really, and I'm not laughing at them. I'm not laughing at them at all. That's an That's a great form of, I think that's great.
I love when anybody loves something. You know, if that brings you some joy, yeah, I'm like, that is awesome. One of the toughest guys I know lives for, he met his wife at a karaoke place.
No. It's amazing. So it taught me the psychology of comedy in 1994. Like, I learned the state of mental of the, you know, how many, you know, you're not going to turn off a Denver Nugget game.
No.
You're not turning it
off. Nobody's paying it.
Don't even think of, you know, in those days, what saved you is that there was no Sunday night game.
Okay.
There was no Sunday night football game, so there were a lot of open mics on Sundays.
Okay.
Any area I moved to or any area I would go to, they would go, stay on Sunday. There's tons of open mics on Sundays. Because there wasn't that 5:30 NFL family game. So, but if Denver was playing at night, you're done. You know, if Denver played in the afternoon, the 1 o'clock game, that open mic was going to be phenomenal.
Yeah.
Plus, there's going to be a couple drunk people at the bar.
Yeah, because they just crossed over for the whole day.
So you're going to have a problem. You know what I'm saying? When you started, did you figure this out little by little? Did you?
Yes, and I started to realize it. All everything matters, and I started to see the rules of the game that if you could just stick it out, if you could just persevere, it got a little bit easier at every level. Like if you were doing an open mic where it was just comics. And you only had 2 or 3 minute spot. If you got one laugh, that you're a king. But then a step up would be, there used to be a bar show down by Val Surf in that little strip mall. There's like a Chinese restaurant. It's like right on the LA River. They would do a bar show like on Tuesday nights or something like that. But there would be maybe 8 real people in there. And I would go, oh, this is better than doing an open mic at Gower Gulch in front of just comics. Because even though it's in a bar, there's real people
is
there.
Gower Gulch.
I think it's still going on. I think it is.
I'm talking about the one from 15 years ago.
Yeah, the Miyagi's or whatever. There was that Japanese.
The guy owned and he was begging for people to take a night in there for a while.
Yes.
And he would give you like 100% of the door, but he'd only give you $2 when 80 people showed up.
Yes.
Something weird.
Yeah, I walked off stage of that room once.
I never even walked in there. I just heard all the fucking nonsense that went with it.
Yeah, it was horrible.
That went with it. And I was like, you know. There's also people who book the improvs. Like, then here I am in L.A. 20 years later, and I get an offer from the improvs. It was 2000, maybe 9.
Okay.
9 or 8. Dan.
Oh, yeah. Dan from
Brea.
Yeah.
Called me one day, and he goes, I have a weird feeling about you. I want you to host a dirty show.
I remember that. It was Wednesday nights I remember
one
that.
One Wednesday a month. And I started learning about commitment.
Mm-hmm.
I started learning about the commitment from people who pay for tickets.
Oh,
to people that was going to be that. Free tickets.
Absolutely. It's a different room.
That's a huge difference.
You can even see that at the store. When they do those early shows, sometimes they'll go, use this code word for a free ticket or a $5 ticket. Huge difference because they're not invested. Yeah, the more they're invested, the better the audience.
It's so weird how when I went to Rochester one time, like I was learning how to book this room. He would tell me, I'm going to give you like 3 months of a guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
Then after that, you have to figure it out on yourself. Everybody had to get paid. You know what I'm saying? Like, there was times I walked out of my own room with $25 because I paid everybody. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Take a meal. You got to tip the waitstaff, $50
yes.
bucks.
Yes.
And you got 8 people drinking who don't bring their friend.
Yeah.
Who's nice, but I learned a lot because after about the fifth one, I had like 14 people in there and I'm like, wow. And I did the road. I went to Rochester and the guy at the Rochester club was crazy and whatever. But one thing he said to me, he goes, I don't do nothing for free here. He goes, I gave that game up years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, I'd rather do a show with 10 paid regular than 100 people who didn't pay.
Yeah,
he goes, when you come into my club, you have to give me something. A watch, $3, $5, $10. He goes, I will not give away a free ticket. And I remember looking at him as crazy as he was in his personal life.
Yeah.
And going, he's on to something.
Yeah, it's true.
And then was the creation of me learning how to sell a ticket. Now you have to build that value.
You know
what I'm saying? How do you build that value? So it's really weird how the lesson is taught to you.
Yeah.
You see that you need commitment from people. People go, oh, it was a shitty show. Well, they weren't there to watch comedy.
Exactly.
They were there for a checker tournament, and you bumped into their checker tournament.
Right, and as a young comic, I didn't realize how important the audience was to my performance, the psychology of the audience. And then I even started to, just by working the door at the store, I'm like, oh, Tuesday night's got a different energy than a Saturday night. People that get there early, you could even see people that were getting to the club early that really wanted to be there. They were better audience members than people. You know how the store would keep the OR going and sometimes drunk people just walk by and walk in and didn't know what they were getting themselves into? It all matters. All of it matters. Even the way the rooms are laid out, you know, like the height of the stage, the ceilings, how close, if like Wayne's room this weekend in Reno, I'm like, if he just sat the people.
Congratulations. Thank you for taking Lee with you.
Oh, it was great.
You had a great time.
It was so much fun. But
Lee drove 17 hours. He learned what life is
all about. He got a speeding ticket.
He's got blisters on his asshole and his ass.
He did great.
I talked to him last night, and I could hear it in his voice that you feel the bumps and the humps from just sitting there. You got to stretch out after every time you know, because I would drive a gallon. I would drive a tank out. My rule is I don't stop till the tank is on E.
Yep. Okay. I have a question for you about that, though. Did you ever run out of gas? Because I did that on the way up, and I got real close. No. I was driving like 40 miles an hour.
Well, you
got
to pay attention also. You have to also have to pay attention. If you see you're at low, and then like this is the last gas for 80,000 miles,
yeah,
you got to go.
They don't always have those signs. And I was
get in
was
there, fine, but yeah. Get something to eat.
Yeah, some fresh air.
Make
yeah.
two or three phone calls. Let your blood... It's just process. It's
yeah, so you're process. You know, you can get hypnotized on the road. Yeah. Like you got to get your
especially
brain out of that.
Night. Especially yes. at night. So that's why I told him, you know, you go and it's driving to comedy gigs is a complete different fucking animal. You know, yeah. I love when people drive for a living. Like my friend Timmy drives for a living and people drive for a living. I always give them a lot of respect because did it for. You know, I drove from 94 to 2003, and then Rogan, and then, you know, this guy, and then eventually, you know, but I pretty much fucking drove. I remember finally, like, in 2004, the club in, like, something, Pennsylvania called me, and I agreed to the week, and somebody told me, like, you gotta land in Newark and drive 3 hours. I was like, it looks like I'm canceling that bitch. I didn't cancel till Friday at 6.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, like, I was so scared to came. They're like, we knew it. We already had somebody here. Plus, you were going to be dirty. We didn't want you anyway. I was like, so we both won.
So, yeah, what are we talking about?
After they hired me, they watched the tape, and they were like, oh, my God. They called me up. They're like, if you come, you have to change your material. Some part of Pennsylvania, JR's Comedy Club or something.
Oh, like up in Erie or something like that? Yeah, I've heard of that room. Yeah.
And now a woman owns it, and she's a little bit more liberal. She lets you go off. She gives door deals, but in those days, it was run by guys that they played a banjo. Anybody who plays a banjo, you don't want to talk to them. You know what I'm saying? Anybody who plays like a banjo and tells you like they're kind of creepy somewhere. They got a kid in the basement. They got a grandma in an attic somewhere with a gag on and a ball in their mouth or something. Those banjo people are fucking crazy.
Yeah, I don't think I've met any. Thank God.
Yes, yeah. They just don't. Identify. They don't say right off the bat they play the banjo. You got to tell them some one of your secrets first. I kill butterflies, and they'll tell you that.
I play the banjo.
It's great to see you, by the way.
It's great to be hanging out with you guys.
I know you're doing great things with your little charity. Now, one thing about your charity that I really like, and I haven't donated yet because I'm still figuring out. My wife and me were talking about this.
Yeah,
I'm really picky about my donations.
I don't blame you.
I'm very picky because I do not like when I see most... This is a bold statement I'm going to make. I know that most people will email me or whatever and say it's a bold statement, but every time I see a tragedy, I say to myself, some swindler's going to make $1 million.
Exactly.
And it breaks my heart. I see them out there giving away water and supplies and all this shit. I'm like... Katrina, I'm like, and sure enough, the mayor robbed $1.9 million, you know. I know, and it bothers the fuck out of me.
Yep.
When JJ did the Houston one, I donated to his.
Yep.
The football player from
Houston. JJ Watt. That
now,
was amazing.
I don't like talking about this shit on the air because I don't want people to think I'm just trying to prove a point about something to talk to Steve about it because I think that what he's doing with All Things Comedy, I know you're partnering up, you got a lot of support over there.
Yep.
Is very special. I believe that if you have a nonprofit and the president drives a better car than me,
absolutely,
something's not right.
I completely agree.
You're getting $225,000 a year. That's most of the people you're helping.
Yep.
I think if you want to do an organization, you should have a day job.
Yep.
And do that on top of it extra.
Absolutely.
You know, I would do something if I had time.
Exactly.
Somewhere along the line, something's going to get caught out.
Yep.
But if I could do something one day a week for a shelter, a cat shelter, or something like that, I'd be involved.
Exactly.
But I'm not going to give you $300 for your earthquake relief system. Yeah. I know there's a white fuck somewhere
absolutely.
Or a black dude.
Yep.
I'm not just going to blame white people. Black dudes got sticky fingers too. Or a fucking Latino or an Arab or whatever that's taking my fucking money that's supposed to be going to help somebody who fucking really needs their lights turned out.
Yes.
You know, I look at the homeless situation here in Los Angeles. They've given that man millions of dollars for that homeless thing. We pay some fucking high state taxes.
Yes.
And number two, I want to know what they've done with the medical marijuana money.
Yeah.
You know, Colorado gives you a yearly report. These people don't even bring it up.
Yeah.
And if they do, my wife finally looked it up. I go, see how they break it up.
Yeah.
And she told me how they broke it up. Marijuana education and something like that.
It's all a scam.
That's not what that's for. So somebody's lining their pockets with this. So I'm a thief. You know, I've come to the conclusion that I was the thief when I was a kid.
Yes.
And now I see, as soon as there's a fucking a tragedy, and I see a number, and I got to be honest with you, even the Red Cross, I heard that there's discrepancies.
All of them.
I've heard that there's discrepancies in the Red Cross years ago.
All of them.
It tears me apart.
Yeah.
And I see people with the rains and hurricanes and shit. So before I send a dollar, like Chris Herron, Lee, how quick did it take me to send the dollar? Because I know what he's doing.
Yeah.
I know that dude. That dude's not driving a fucking Corvette.
Right.
That dude really believes in his cause. And again, we sent money this year from the church.
That's great.
You know, I don't mind helping you out, you know.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get to those people's hands.
That's
even
it.
Fucking the black guy from the Fugees robbed this fucking thing. It's a very easy temptation.
That's why, like,
it's a very easy temptation.
I didn't even want to touch the money. Like, with this last family, I don't even know what's happening with this. I just saw people that needed help that were good people. People that are always helping other people. Like, this mom I found out about. She's got six kids. Four of them are sick. One of them's really sick. She wasn't asking for a dollar for herself. She's running all... We're doing a party at the Ronald McDonald House Friday night. I got the pizzas donated from a couple buddies. But that's who she is. She's always there's a family with a sick kid that is homeless, living in a motel. She would take half of what she has to go feed that family. When it was another mom at Children's Hospital that told me about her. I was getting one family money, and I put the money straight to the mom. I said, "What's your Venmo? I'm going to do a GoFundMe for you." And I essentially just vouched for these people, and I brought a little awareness, but the money didn't touch any organization and went straight to a mom. Went straight to a mom that lost a kid that works at the hospital, had nothing, and the landlord kicked them out of their house. So they got into a new place, but there was no furniture, nothing. So I was like, if I could get her $5,000 breathing room, great. And that's all I tried to do. We got her to about $3,800, $4,200, and she went, "Steve, I feel blessed. Thank you very much. I'm okay. I can breathe. You have to help Monique out." And then I got to meet Monique. And I went on her social media, and she had a GoFundMe up for another family. She wasn't even thinking about herself. And I went, okay, that's who I'm going to help. I'm going to help the people that are always helping others, that don't ask for anything, and the money's going to go straight to them. Nobody's going to touch it.
What's the name of the fund you have?
Right now, it's just called Al Magical bought the domain name for Help Steve Help. I'm asking people to follow that on Twitter and Instagram. Just follow it for now, and then our game plan's going to be, we're going to do a podcast once a month, do a Patreon for a dollar a month, and you're going to get the podcast. So I'm just asking people to give a buck once a month. But for now, go to Help Steve Help on Instagram and Twitter. And then we're going to put the family up of the month. You're going to give $1, and that money's going to go straight to the family. If we build it up and there's going to be extra money, like instead of, because I think $5,000 is enough breathing room for somebody. And then we'll help the next family. And if we have to cycle a family through three or four times because the problems are real and the money goes fast, I understand that. But the Band-Aid is $5,000. It's going to go straight to them. And then if there's extra money,
you check the arms and smell their neck and make sure they're not smoking crack and shit like that.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's the other problem, because Bill, Bill Berg reached out to me because I think this will evolve into something for the homeless situation as well. Because he goes, our politicians let us down. He goes, these charities are all scams. He goes, I know you're not in this for anything. He goes, Bill was like, I want to help people. I've lived the American dream. He goes, we have to do some job training. We have to make sure that people aren't addicts. He goes, I don't have a problem with addicts. I know they're suffering, but he goes, the problem is if you give an addict money,
yeah, I don't
you're
going to
kill
him.
He goes, you think you're going to help,
yeah,
and you're going to wind up killing them.
That's like, and I, listen, man, I don't know how many times, because I was an addict, I'll throw an addict 20 to make his day.
Yeah.
Go get a fix. Yeah. I know what it's like to get a fix in a sandwich and a soda.
Yes.
I've been there. I get it.
That's true compassion.
But yeah. I don't want to give $5,000
exactly.
to an addict.
Exactly.
Who is showing me a picture of that child with, he puts little red dots on him and tells you.
Well, that's why right now.
And next thing you know, I got people on my, like, I got in trouble 5 years ago on Twitter.
Yeah.
Somebody reported me that the GoFundMe used their credit card. You know, and I was in shock. Like, I was blown the fuck away. I had like 4 or 5 emails in a row, like the California attorney, if I knew this person. And I'm like, no, they just told me to retweet. So now.
Exactly.
I don't, listen, just leave me alone.
I know.
I cannot do it.
I know.
I cannot do it, because these are people who just, they show you a picture of a dude that's laying in a bed with a skeleton.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, these people are in fucking Hollywood somewhere.
Eating lobster tails.
Eating lobster tails.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, I don't mind throwing somebody a 20. I don't mind making somebody's day.
Yeah.
But there's people on Twitter that are really getting in under their car and they're changing oils.
Yeah.
And they're mowing lawns.
Exactly. They're earning their money.
And they give you $20.
And it, yes.
I hope you're not fucking, you know. So when you donate, you know, listen, every time I see a tragedy or something, I hunt. I give it like 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
Because there's people that are waiting. They have 800 numbers all ready to go.
Yep.
I know how it's done. I read a thing years ago in the New York Times, how they busted this. It was like cerebral palsy thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were living like kings.
Yeah.
Traveling around the world. They were just coming back to make withdrawals.
It's awful.
And then I sold things for the cops in Seattle. I went in there as a salesman. They paid me, you know, 25% commission on what I brought in. And I had done it. I'm very ashamed of this. To this day, I'm very ashamed of this, because this is the shit I'm ashamed of.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not ashamed of when I broke into a drug dealer's house. They had it coming. We were drug dealers. This is the shit that really makes me ashamed of things sometimes.
Yeah.
When I lived in Seattle, they were looking for telemarketers, and I went down there, and they give you a pitch, and it's, how you doing? We're calling from North Hollywood Police Department.
Yep.
And we're looking for donations for a new program for school kids. And, you know, because when I was a kid, I remember them giving you the sticker.
Mm.
When I was a kid, if you donated to the fire department,
yes,
they gave you a sticker for your window. That's on the children car. In the room.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
Children in this room.
It's like a silvery sticker. Yeah.
So if you donated $5 in 1970,
yeah,
you got like a little badge from the fire department and you got a sticker for your window. That said, children in the room.
Yep.
So hopefully they'd save you first. I'll tell grandma to go fuck herself.
Right.
Grandma's yelling, help, help, fuck you, bitch. There's kids in the room. You know what I'm saying? So.
Should have bought a sticker.
Yeah, you should have bought a sticker, you dumb bitch. So I always learned from all those things, you know. I sold stickers for CYO, and I donated the money.
Yes.
You know, I told my daughter about 3 weeks ago, and this is no fucking lie. When I got thrown out of Catholic school, I had such a deep guilt in my heart that I connected myself with the American Heart Association. And every year I did the walkathon. And my goal was to break the record. And you had to walk around Hudson County Park. And I would walk it 40 fucking times. And I would get everybody in my mother's bar to give everybody. Mom, you're just supposed to get a dime a mile. Fuck you. I want a dollar. And I won awards till about 10 to 13. Then I started stealing the money myself. Then I would go up there, fuck the
Here's
walk.
Here's a donation.
I'm going to walk. I got the money in my pocket, because I would make them pay me up front.
What, I'm going to walk 15 miles this year?
Yeah, I'm going to walk 25 miles. But I got to be honest with you. For the first 3 years. I really didn't give it the money. They gave me the thing. They took a picture. I won like the highest achiever. That really fucking made my dick hard in those Catholic years when I got thrown out of Catholic school. Hmm. So I told Mercy I want to walk the walkathon this year with her and get money. You know, I'm not expecting a lot of money. I'm going to kick in money myself.
Yeah, I'll do it.
You know, 10 miles, whatever. I think I could walk maybe 3 miles if I'm lucky. So you gotta give me like $5 a mile or something like that, you know? So, but I believe in that, you know?
Me too. It feels good to help.
It feels good to help. That's a good help. But
yeah,
I've had plenty of friends over the last 4 or 5 years that have called me for help. And I've always said, let me call you back.
Mm-hmm.
And I've thought about their situation. I've thought about their life. And I've always helped them.
Yeah.
Because I have to think of what they meant to me when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
With no disregard, I have to write a check. Like, I can't even think about it, you know, because of what they did to me as a child. So even now, there's not much I can do for the homeless problem.
Yeah.
You know, you want me to go get a bus and go pick them all up? Where am I going to take them? To my fucking house? I can't.
I don't have any answers.
But I know that this fucking state, you know, I'd like to have a talk with that Newsom guy. I'd like to have a talk with the other fucking governor. You know, you have to get buses and get people that are trained to go talk to these people. And, you know,
it's worse than it was in New York when I was there twice this year.
I appreciate the Army building 2 houses
right.
on a weekend, but that's not fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
We need dormitory style, mm-hmm. you know, old gyms, shit like that. Keep the people that are homeless. You know the people that you're helping?
Yeah.
I want them separated from mental health.
Yeah.
Okay. The homeless situation is 3 degrees of homelessness.
Yeah, you're right.
It's the economy, drug homelessness, and mental health hopelessness. That's what I think. As a casual observer,
I agree.
You know, when
there
I'm walking,
some people
right
that
there,
look normal.
We're going to take the 101. When you make that right to take the 101, there's a pretty fucking lady that walks around with a bikini and a thing. And at first, you look at her and you go, "Oh, you know," you're like, "Whoa, what the fuck?" She's got mental. You know, she washes her fucking shoes on the street. Yeah. I saw her one morning. Putting bottled water on her feet. Her feet were black.
Yeah.
You know, that's mental health. Yeah. That's not somebody who went into, you know, lost his job, the kid got hurt. You know, there's a lot of people by NoHo Park that live in trailers.
Yeah, oh, that's like everywhere. People living in cars and RVs.
And then they leave in the daytime.
Yeah.
Or they go there in the daytime and they leave at night. You're not allowed to park there no more. The trailer thing got so bad there at night that the cops put up signs. Those people are homeless. Those people... 10 years ago, Fannie Mae, whatever that was.
Yeah, the 2008
those
collapse.
Are those, people. Those are those people that said, you know what, we're going to take the last $22,000 we have in savings and buy some type of used thing and until we figure this out. Because I used to lift weights over there. I used to walk in the hall, and I would stop and talk to those people, and they would tell me their stories.
Yeah.
They would say, you know, we lost our home with Fannie Mae.
It's heartbreaking.
Whatever the fuck it was. So right now in Los Angeles, you know, there's weed money. I know in Colorado, it's so fucking tight. It's to the seed. And they show you where it goes to schools and this and that. Here, since we went legal, I haven't heard nothing about it.
No.
I don't mind paying tax. And you know that, dog, go to fucking the old Perennial and get an eighth of weed and come back to me. Thank God I go to Urban Trees and they give me like a deal and you know, they pound the taxes on there, but the deal they give me is too good. They give me a great deal. Go to a regular weed store as a recreational user.
And see how expensive it is?
And see how expensive the taxes are. And you're like...
It's 25%. No, 35.
23, I think. Something like that.
Because I think it's 10% for medical, and then I think it's like either 25 or 35 for recreational. And the thing for Steve, because I know you've been on in the past couple of years, but in case people are new, you met these families at Children's Hospital. So they weren't like submitting. Like you met some of these people who really need.
Yeah, and the way we're verifying is that we're going to just have people pay it forward. So the family we're helping now will go, okay, well, here's another mom that needs the $5,000. And then when we get that family the help, then they nominate the next family. But I think, look, it's just in its baby steps. I pray that and hope that it'll grow into something great. But for right now, it's all people that really need the money that have fallen through the cracks. They're truly victims. You know, that's the saddest thing ever. They're sick kids and people don't realize all the bills associated over that because usually if a parent's working, they might have to stop working right off the bat to take care of the kid. There's gas back and forth to the hospital. There's the, it's 10, 15 bucks a day just to park at the hospital. So I have big dreams of what I think it could turn into. But for right now, the family I'm helping right now, I just shared the mom's Venmo and I got her a GoFundMe and the money went straight there. I had a couple of my buddies that own the Italian deli, that own the pizza place, that have fed the families. We've done little parties for the families at those places. And that's it. Give the kids something to look forward to, you know? That's it.
I was telling you that I lived in Seattle and I had that. I worked for these guys and I was making money, you know? $600 a week.
Every time he turns, I can tell.
Oh, oh my God.
Disgusting.
That's pure garlic right there.
Can I be on your list, like down the list, like the number 100 just for these farts?
So, I take these garlic parsley tablets. You're supposed to take two for you. To clean out your system, I take three.
I guess it's working.
I'm a little,
only on days when you're going to see me, you take three.
I'm on the heavy side. You know what I'm saying? So, I got to take three of them. But if you take a whiff of this, take a whiff
of
this.
No, I'm not going to take a whiff of it on purpose.
Your lips are turning white from just from the fucking substance in the air. So, I work for these guys. And, you know, it was great for about 6 months. I did great. I showed up every day. And basically the pitch was a shakedown.
Yeah.
It was a pitch that you had a business and you wanted the police to support you. So if you put this PBA sticker on your window or your car, they would know you supported the police department, whatever. Yeah. And I would sell fucking $200 ads, three. I know how to sell ads, Jack, you know. Then one day I said, let me actually look at this newspaper. This newspaper looked like it cost fucking two cents to make.
Yeah.
Like it was like some kid made it with crayon. And then I asked one of the guys that worked, and he goes, you didn't know the scam? They give you 25%, and they pretty much keep 65%. And give the other 10% to a charity. All three owners had BMWs and Lexuses and convertibles. I remember the three guys. And I remember on the way out, I was leaving on a Sunday, and I went to one of the guys after he robbed me for fucking 8 months, and he was robbing people.
Yeah.
One guy became friendly with me. We would come to the Seattle comedy thing. But he was a piece of shit, and I knew him. And like the weekend I left, I said, yo, I need a big favor from you. I'm moving. Can I get 2 weeks' salary advance to me? And he goes, what do you make a week? I go, about 600. He goes, I write you a check for 12. Ching, ching. Pew. See you later, cocksucker.
Yep. Got him back. Well, so many of those places, that's how they operate.
That's how they operate. Like, they only give, like, there's a percentage by law that they have to give. And when you realize that percentage, people, if you look it up,
it's
your
horrifying.
Heart will break. You'll it's go, horrifying. Wait a second. If I donate $100, the person that I'm donating to, after all the funnels and paperwork and bullshit, only basically gets
$15.
No, like $15.
It's hard. Well, there's also whisper down the line. So, like, there's organizations that'll say they'll do what you did, and then they make that donation of the $15 out of $100 to the American Heart Association, whatever charity it might be. But then they do the same thing. Like, even these established good charities, like a buddy of mine. He doesn't give money to charities. He's got a lot of money because his buddy ran some big famous charity, one of the household name ones, and he had a $50,000 mahogany desk.
No, I know. This is what I'm talking about.
So that's why I see that, and I just go, I'm just putting it right in the mom's pocket. That's it. It's just, this is going to pay bills. This is putting gas in the car, food on the table, car seats. Like the family we're helping now, as soon as a check came in for me and I went, all right, I can afford to give a certain, and she showed me the car seats that she bought with the money I gave her. Because I know right where it's going. Nobody's touching it.
It's funny, about 2 weeks ago, I was at the car wash on Lancashire, just getting my car washed, and I saw like a Dodge minivan show up, you know? And all of a sudden the door slid out, and three little black kids.
Yeah.
Two little boys and a little girl, and then the guy came out, and he gave me each a box of fucking candy. And he was like, remember what I told you? Stick to the motherfucking script. You know, and I'm like sitting there going, this guy's like a fucking pimp. And I still remember getting caught up in one of those things one day with this fat, disgusting dude. This dude, him and his sister, both of them tipping the scales at 500. Oof. I don't want to say his name on here from North Bergen. She came to me one day. She's like, do you want to make money? My brother makes money and all that shit. Yeah. She was as ugly as fuck and fat as fuck. And her brother was a slob, just like it hung over the sides. Her brother made Ralphie look small.
Yeah.
And all he would do is sit in that car and smoke cigarettes and drink milkshakes from Carvel. He would have three of those things in his fucking car at one time.
Jesus.
He was huge. So what he would do is drive you into a neighborhood, and you would knock on doors to get newspaper subscriptions. And he would give you like 25 cents a subscription. And I'll never forget, like, we had to meet him at 9 and then work till 12. But that day he picked three gangsters.
Mm-hmm.
He picked like the wrong three gangsters. I forget who he picked. But like we were like 12 o'clock, we taking lunch. He's like, I don't do lunch. And we're like, yo, fat boy, you're doing lunch.
How old were you guys?
Oh, we were like 13.
Oh, that's great.
Like in the eighth grade. He caught like the three wrong guys. I forget. I wish I could remember who he had. I do not remember. But we're like, yo, we're eating. And he goes, oh, I don't take lunches. And that's your responsibility. And we're like, what or not? Because we all work for different people in the neighborhood. And the street code was, whenever you hire kids in the neighborhood, you got to feed them lunch.
Yeah.
You got to get a pizza. You got to get sandwiches from the deli.
That's what I was trying to tell Lee about when I took Lee on the road. He goes, why are you paying? I go, it's the code. I go, the headliner always has to pay.
There's a code. There's
we go to the movies. I go, Lee, put your money away. Well, you're not going to pay for this too. And I go, you have to. The headliner buys the meals. If the headliner asks you to the movies, we got to pay.
Downhill. Don't worry about it. Someday.
You just pay it forward.
You'll be paying meals for some feature act yourself.
Exactly.
It all comes back.
Yeah.
You know, I thank Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan bought me more steaks than my mother did. That's a fact. Joe Rogan bought me more $40 steaks than my mother did. That's a fact.
I remember Joe Rogan taking us out to that diner. I didn't even know a diner existed in the, what's that fancy hotel right across the street from the store? The Standard?
The Standard downstairs.
Starving.
Blue cheeseburgers.
Yes.
Tremendous.
Joe goes like this.
No.
I didn't even know it was in there.
Me? Yeah. I haven't been there.
Yeah, he ordered everything. The everything off the menu. He could get two of those. No,
there was
backs
a 6-month period. We would take it there.
And it was the only meal I'd have all day. I'll forever be grateful for those meals.
We would either walk, too. He would make us walk to the fucking Standard. You're like, God damn it.
Yeah.
And you'd walk to the Standard because it wasn't worth getting out of the thing. Like 8 of us would go to the Standard.
He'd feed us.
But the blue cheeseburger at the Standard with the french fries. Oh, I know 20 years ago, guys. This is 19. This is news radio.
Mm-hmm.
90. This is pre
Fear Factor.
That's how long that was. Where he would take us to the Standard or Pink Dot was guaranteed. If he wasn't in the mood to walk, I would get off stage. He would watch my spot at 1:30, and then we'd head to Pink Dot and get the meatball palm
with a roast beef sandwich.
Oh my God!
That's when. Because you knew I was starving, you gave me half your sandwich. Because I was managing the club then.
Yes.
And you brought it in and you go, here, do yourself a favor. Because I was living off those peanuts Mitzi would sell in the red plastic bags. I had to eat all day.
I'll never forget reading Kennison's book and him talking about him and Carla Bow would get to the store at 7 and eat the fruit.
Bartenders.
The bartenders would cut. That's how hungry they were.
Yep.
And I remember finding myself one day putting extra limes in a Coke for like vitamins, like, I'm so broke.
You don't want to get scurvy or something.
I don't want to get scurvy. Like, I'm snorting coke. I'm eating fucking Wendy's burgers for lunch. I got to put some type of vitamin in my system.
You have real food.
It was Huck who told me, can I talk to you? And Huck used to do coke and have false teeth.
Yeah.
So when he'd snort coke, the false teeth would shatter in his mouth. Tremendous.
I love Huck.
So Huck was the first person that ever told me. He goes, I care about you. You do not get the... Because he's like, from where are they from?
Thailand.
He goes, you do not get offended if I tell you. He goes, you drink too much soda.
Mm.
He was the first person ever that had the balls. He goes, the other night I count 14, 15 sodas. You have to stop.
Wow.
I was like, okay. And then I started drinking diet. And he's like, no, diet bad too.
Yeah.
I go, let's meet halfway. So whenever he would be on shift, I'd drink Jack and Coke with diet,
Yeah.
But he's the first person that told me, you're too old. This is 20 years ago.
Yeah,
he was telling me, you're too old to be drinking soda.
No. Dude, I loved Huck so much. Loved him. Yeah. Were you there the night he dropped Renazizi with all those guys are Thai boxers. He dropped Renazizi with a liver kick going quarter speed. I mean, I've never seen a human being fall like that. Because precise, those Muay Thai guys, he grew up to not kicking trees down. And he
Tripoli got into an argument with the one dude.
Tony.
And we were trying to hold him back. And he had the strength of 10 fucking elephants. It was one of those things that you hold somebody and you're like, oh my God, come on, knock it off. I can't do this. Like, he was really pushing me. And I was 400 pounds. And he was moving. He was going after Tripoli that night.
That it was probably Tony. Tony was like the
middle one. Yeah. Yes. The one that looked like Bruce Lee. Like the guy.
Yes.
He looked like the guy who played Bruce Lee. Chris, whatever his name.
And he had a sinister laugh. Tony loved me. And he'd come in and watch my sets. And he'd just go, like that.
I remember that. Those were weird times. Those were weird. When he told me about the fucking sodas, I was like, thank you.
Yeah.
He goes, you come in for 6 nights a week, drink 15 sodas. 15 sodas.
That's a lot.
From 8 to 10, and then you go home and you're up to a 4. Cause you're
all that caffeine. Jazzed up, you know? Yeah.
But no, I'm really happy and proud of you that you're doing this, because I know that you're doing it out of a... Nothing bothers me more when people take a cause. It's fucking fake.
Yeah, it's the
like
worst.
You see right through it.
Yeah.
You know, listen. I like people who do things and nobody has to know about it.
That's you know what the truth is?
When I do something, I don't want, nobody needs to
know. It's nobody's business. Between us. That's it.
I'll put anonymous on there.
Yeah, all my stuff.
You know, if you got to do something to let people know, don't do it.
You're doing it for the wrong.
Don't do it.
You're doing and
it
that's wrong. This whole thing I'm very leery about, because if one person spends the money the wrong way, one person does something. Al bought the name Help Steve Help. I didn't want my name on it. I didn't even want to put anything out there. But then my buddy Sal, that owns a pizza place downtown, he went, and we were talking, and he's a smart guy, self-made guy. And he goes, I understand everything you're saying. But he goes, you have to be more concerned that that mom that can't afford a car is going to get a car so she can go visit her kid and get her kid to the hospital than what anybody else says or thinks. But if I was rich, I would just do it. I would just pay it without anybody knowing. That's the whole reason why I wanted to get into this business, was to help people. But I was like, I might never become rich, and these people still need help. So I used to give what I could give. And then a couple years ago, a podcast listener sent me a couple $100 at Christmas. It was Thanksgiving. I was in the stinky motel. I took a gig at the Mall of America 3 months in advance. November, yeah, I'm open in November. And I realized it was Thanksgiving weekend. So I'm sitting in the motel that they knocked down, since knocked down. It was horrible. It's one of those motels where the floor wasn't even.
This wasn't the new Mall of America.
No, it was across the parking lot from the new Mall of America. It was horrible. They knocked it down and built a nicer hotel. But I was in that hotel. A podcast listener just heard me say something about visiting a family at the hospital. She goes, I want my kids to know the value of giving. I said, all right, if I send, can I PayPal you a little donation so they know? And I go, yeah, I thought it was going to be $25 or something. $250, $400. So then, first time I ever shared anything on social media, because I didn't want anybody to know what I was doing, I went, does anybody have a hookup with PlayStations? Because now I thought if somebody kept me an employee discount, I could buy two of them and I could help both families. Immediately, my buddy Carlo from the Italian Deli sends me a message. He goes, there's two brand new PlayStations at the deli. Pick them up. He goes, use that money for other gifts. Then Andrew Themlis, who produces Bill Burr's podcast, goes, I think we should do something with this. He goes, Bill hates normal charities. He doesn't trust them. He goes, but he trusts you.
After a while, that's how terrible is that, that we're making that statement?
Everybody says it.
It's a well-known thing,
isn't it? It's a well-known thing.
It's fucking
horrible. That's the world we live in.
It's fucking horrible. Like in my deepest, darkest fucking moments, I wouldn't even fake something like that.
No.
Like the guy who scammed me put like a kid up with tubes and shit. And I'm like, who thinks this up? Like, in my darkest fucking moments, I'd rather rob you with a gun.
Absolutely.
I've always had a fucking thing. If you come and rob me with a gun, I'll give it to you.
Yeah.
But don't try to fucking con me with something like that.
It's horrible.
I remember going back and looking at the thing, because they sent me everything in the email that I had retweeted on what date at what time, and I don't know how the guy got caught. I don't know what the fuck it was, but I remember how, like, I felt stupid.
Yeah.
I felt taken, because you can't help everybody, but every little bit counts.
Absolutely. Well, it kills your spirit, too.
It kills your spirit.
That's the problem. Like, you mess up once, and then people go, forget it. I'm not going to give to any charity. I'm not going to trust anybody. So it's horrible. They're killing the kindness in people.
I just told you a story of me admitting to you guys, me borrowing money from a guy that I knew I was not going to give money to.
Right.
Regardless of whether the guy was a good guy or a bad guy, my deed should not be applauded. We giggled here because you know who I am.
Right.
I've done some very cold-blooded things, but they've always been to people in a way who had it coming. They got themselves involved over the head. There were some few unfortunates. There were some good people who came up to me and said, I want to be a cocaine investor.
Right.
What do I get if I give you $10,000, $20,000?
Yeah.
If you're going to come up to me and give me $10,000, I got to take it from you if you're going to be that stupid.
You reminded me of Paulie Walnuts when he goes, purgatory, because soldiers don't go to hell for killing other soldiers.
No.
That's what you're doing. It was soldiers to soldiers.
It was soldiers to soldiers. So, but putting up a thing or saying that you're a CEO or you're the whatever of a nonprofit, and I find out you're driving a fucking convertible Beamer, my blood pressure goes zero over fucking.
My buddy that started the Regular Hero charity, the only money that doesn't go straight to the cause is to the accountant and to the lawyer. He lives in his art studio and he doesn't have a car. So like when we would do a fundraiser at the store and get like $8,000 from the door, that $8,000, you could track it exactly to what families it went to and then what they spent the money on too. Like people go, look, I need to pay my rent. Done. I need to get a car for this. Done. And
I'm grateful to be a part of it. For those families.
That's what I got it set up at the store. Yes. Where we Uber. Comedy store already paid for the drinks.
Podcast t-shirts.
That would be great.
Hats.
Because the moms need it. The families need this.
Fucking Gino kicking some speed weed.
Yeah.
And some CBD oil. We could get CBD Lion.
Yeah.
Get involved if you need them.
I need that. Because you know, that's
some kids who want CBD oil, whatever, we get them
involved. A family in Pennsylvania where that's the only thing. There was actually a kid I grew up with who reached out to me. He was like, I see what you're always doing. He goes, here's my situation.
And no THC in it, so everybody's happy.
Yeah.
This is
and it's working for this kid and his seizures. It's the only thing that worked.
Yeah, it's so weird. I forgot to bring it with me this weekend to Kansas City. I have a 500 milligram CBD Lion in my travel bag.
Like a rub?
No, I have the tincture under my tongue at night.
Uh-huh.
Like, just as I'm getting in that realm of that after the show jitters.
Yep.
CBD.
Yeah, because you're elevated.
The CBD. And I know a lot of people are going to go, Joey, you need THC in it. Listen, I got enough THC on my own. Trust me, when I put two tinctures under my tongue at night, I got an hour and 15 minutes.
It's great.
It's a slow thing. But you know what? I need an hour. Let me write for an hour.
Yep.
I need an hour. What am I doing with my life?
And then you sleep solid through the night?
I don't pee.
Oh, that's great.
Wait till you turn 47 and every hour on the hour, you start peeing. You know, different foods and different whatever makes your whatever swell.
Yeah.
Your
prostate or whatever it is.
You know, there's nights I would get up and the pee would come out. Like my prostate would be swollen or whatever and the pee would come out like drickles, like that you're standing there for actually 7 minutes, you wake yourself up, you're like, I can't go back to sleep now. And the sun nights were fucking, like after you fly.
Mm-hmm.
So after you fly, you retain that water. A guy like me gets that water in his legs. When I get to the hotel, I put the computer on, I lay on the floor, I lay on the bed with my legs higher to get the water out.
Drain it down.
Forget it. All night, I'll be fucking peeing. Guess what? For Thursday night, I got in that hotel at 11 from Kansas City, did the CBD oil, slept like a tank.
Great. I'm going to get that
from my
mom.
I even went to bed at 11 o'clock LA time.
Wow.
Because I thought I was going to be up till fucking 2 in the morning.
3 in the morning, yeah. Your body clock gets all messed up.
I was in bed at 11:30. 1:30, I turned the lights off.
That's great.
I went to bed hard, and I got up. Friday night in Kansas City, I went to bed without the CBD. I was like, fuck. 2 hours into your sleep, there you are peeing.
Wow.
And then Saturday, I was so excited about Denver, I got back and I didn't sleep at all, really.
Yeah.
I slept like 3 hours and I woke up at 5. And what came out of my dick was 2 pounds of fucking urine. Drinking all those waters during the show.
Yeah, because the elevation in Denver, too, I need to drink water all the time. Oh, my God.
When I got there, I took my pants off before the shower. And I was watching the baseball game, and I threw my leg up on the bed, and something made me look at my legs. I was there for 3 hours, and already my skin was fucking brutally dry on my legs. I was like, oh, my God. I mean, I got there. I took my sweats off after the plane. I put shorts on. We were right to Sam's number 3.
Oh, that diner's great.
We were 2 minutes. Uber was like $5.
Oh, right there on the corner?
I had 25%, yeah. I had 25% on UberX all weekend because I'm platinum. I was living off UberX like a doctor for like 5 hours going around the world.
That's great. So
I
went,
bro, we weren't in. Listen, we got off the plane in Denver, went upstairs. I go, Felicia, I'll call you in 5 minutes. I basically went back. Took my computer out, plugged in the sleep apnea machine, took a piss, washed my hands, rolled a joint, went downstairs, met. That's how quick it was. There was no time for discussion. Perfect. Ubered Sam number 3, got there. We got a cool waitress.
I love that spot.
All I had for breakfast was oatmeal that morning because I was prepared. I starved. I had a 4-point protein bar on the flight that my wife packs me on the plane. They're fucking tremendous. I knew I was going to kill some points.
Yeah.
So I went and got a bowl of green chili, which is like 16 points. That's just a day killer. Wow. And then I opened up with the chicken beef fajitas. And I kept it light. I only ate one tortilla.
That's
and
good.
The rest I ate. I didn't touch the cheese. I ate all the lettuce. I took the salsa, the lettuce, and the onions.
The salsa, they're so good.
I mixed
good.
All the salsas to die for. Then we invited the waitress to the show. She nearly died. She came with her mother and the mother's boyfriend.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, she came to the show. I texted the bowl of chili. And before I got up, I had 8 members in the church show up to Sam's number 3.
Oh, my. That's fantastic.
That's when you know Sam's number 3. Guy came with his dad. I want to thank you for saying hello. Another couple showed up. When I was eating barbecue in Kansas City, I took a picture, and within 3 minutes, a girl came up to me. She's like, I can't believe I'm here with you. I noticed the plate.
Wow. That's awesome.
That means more to me than the comedy show. That shit, like when I post green chili and you show up to Sam's number 3 out of respect, you got me.
That real connection, it's the greatest.
It was just like, it's
the best.
Oh my God. Oh my fucking God.
We had that happen in Reno. This guy who worked at the sandwich shop, we went twice. He knew everyone from the podcast. He knew me, and he wanted to start comedy. And we offered him free tickets, and we introduced him to the local comics. We put him on his path.
We put him on his comedy path. I was like, John, this is not a mistake. This is divine intervention. You've been thinking about comedy. You have a comedy notebook, but you haven't done your first open mic yet. And we show up, and we're doing a podcast.
Did you put him on stage?
No, he didn't go on stage.
He wouldn't do it.
He'd never been up yet.
He hadn't been up yet. But we hooked him up with Wayne, and Wayne was like, gave him 4 shows. He goes, we're going to start you with these. Didn't Wayne open up the books for him or something?
I don't know if he got books, but he definitely knows where the open mics are now. He knows Wayne. So he might. I just didn't hear that part.
It's so weird.
I think Wayne gave him dates.
It's so wow, good for him.
How divine intervention in any career. It's so life-changing. And life gives you little signals, and you don't pay attention to them at first. And all of a sudden, one day, you're just put in this situation. And that thing you wanted to do, now you're doing it. You know, with me, I wanted to do it. Like
me too.
3 people told me.
Yeah.
And I get anxiety just thinking about it.
Me
like
too.
I wanted to do it so bad, and I had a fucking day job. I was a roofer.
It's hard work.
And I'm like, God. Roofer, Jesus. But I was an estimator, but I still worked my ass off. I was the hardest. I had to work. It was my brother-in-law's company. Yeah. I had to work harder than everybody else. You know. And not people would say your brother-in-law's
exactly.
Shit.
Yep.
So I was climbing ladders, stocking jobs, getting coffee, estimating, going. Yep.
Keeping everybody happy.
Taking estimation classes at night for fucking different companies. I went into it, you know. When I went in, I went in. He gave me a tremendous salary. I'm not going to lie to you. He gave me a great salary that I did not deserve. But I knew that I just couldn't accept it. I had to work to get that salary. So I became an estimator. But comedy was still ringing. And then we had a snow day. and I watched Punchline, and that was it.
Oh, with Tom Hanks.
Yeah, my fucking heart broke, and I'm like, you know, like half crying. Why'd I fucking get married? You know, why does life have to be so? But then I didn't have the balls to go on stage. So what difference is it making? Life is fair or not?
Yeah.
If you're gonna be a pussy about getting on stage, life is never gonna be fair.
Yeah.
I sat there for 6 months. I sat there for maybe a year.
Yeah.
Without going.
I know
on.
That feeling.
And then I finally went into a fucking thing to get coffee, and for some reason I opened up a notebook and I saw a picture of Andy Payton, and it was talking about Roseanne's success and do you want to be a stand-up? These are the comedy stand-up courses. And if you want me to tell you that was divine intervention.
I think it was.
If you want me to tell you it was something else, you believe that. The Lord put that in my path. Whatever he may be, Chinese, black.
Yeah, exactly. Who knows,
Buddha,
right?
Jewish, right. Whatever that God is, I don't want you to go, oh, well, Joey's going off the reservation talking about God. No.
Yeah.
Whatever that power is at the universe. Because it was one of these things where you take a newspaper, go like that, and there it was.
Yeah. Come on.
You know, it wasn't like I got the newspaper and said, oh, what, you know,
right.
A guy lit his kid on fire today in Denver. No, I opened up the middle just from habit.
Yep.
And there it was. So I think back now, thank God for whatever or whatever karma putting that sign up, like giving me that sign, you know. What was your sign?
Well, I had so many of them. But I remember once Joe Matarese. I'd met him at a I got booed off stage at a place called, what was it? It was called the Laugh House.
In Philly. Right, right.
That's on South Street.
Hart started. And
he was the one that gave me a pep talk.
Jay.
Big Jay used to close it
Big
out.
Jay, yep.
My first open mic ever, I got booed off stage. It was horrible. What was my first open mic at that place? I'd done a few like a year before. And I'm like, that's it. I'm not doing it. But then I had that bug. Like, I was thinking about it all week. So then I went, you know what? I'm not going to perform. I'll just go down and watch. Then I went down and watched. And honestly, it was Kevin Hart who gave me like a pep talk. Like, come back. No, sign up next week. Do it. And then the headliner that weekend was Matarese, who I had heard about years before, about some kid from Philly that went to New York and was doing good things. So then I met Matarese at that show. I came back. The open mic was on Tuesday. I came back Friday or Saturday night. And Matarese went and got a slice of pizza with me and gave me a pep talk. He's like, no, just this is how you do it. And I went, okay. And then it still took years for me to really do it. And then Matarese invited me up to New York once. We went to a Yankee Red Sox day game. And I'm like, this is what comedians do during the day. This is great. That night, we went to Gotham that had just opened up because one of his buddies heard that Seinfeld was going to do a pop-in. So then all the comics were hanging out. I wound up talking to Seinfeld. And this is like in 2099, something like that. He's like the biggest star in the world. He was very nice to me. And then I came to LA. I went home. I quit my job. My buddy that was supposed to move out here with me, he was too afraid to quit his job. He had a government job. He didn't want to give up. So now I had no job, nothing. I thought I'd never do comedy again. And then a buddy and my mom was like, well, maybe Hollywood will come to you. And I'm like, really? And you think that's going to happen? I go to the Iron Sport gym. My buddy Jax goes, hey, he sold beer like one of those guys. He goes, we're having a comedy contest. And if you win it, you get to perform with Pauly Shore. And I go, get out of here. So I go, I entered it. I'd been on stage like maybe 8 times, won the contest, met Pauly, and that's how I got out here. God had to put 1,000 signs. One sign didn't work for me. I mean, I could go into details on them.
And today you're still dear friends with Pauly Shore. 20
yeah, years, 20 years later. Yeah, been working at his club. He that comedy store has been my family for the last 19 years.
It's been my family for 22 years. What's the name of your charity again?
Just what I'm asking for people right now is go to Help Steve Help on Instagram and Help Steve Help on Twitter. If you go to helpstevehelp.com, you'll see the GoFundMe for the family we're currently helping. And in the bio, the GoFundMe, there's the mom's Venmo. I'm just asking people for a dollar. But for right now, if they could just follow us on Instagram and Twitter, then we'll start sharing stories. We'll figure out a way to make it easy for people to give a buck. And then we're going to do a podcast with All Things Comedy through a Patreon where you get the podcast for a buck. If you want to donate, I don't know, $50 or something, you'll get a custom T-shirt every month, whatever it is.
I'm very
and that's
proud
it.
Of you, man. It's an honor to be your friend.
I feel the same way.
I know you're doing this from the heart, and that's the most important thing. A lot of people do this just to get fucking a TV show in this town.
Oh, Jesus.
Surprised. And,
yeah.
And I think I'm going to do one. You know, a couple of years ago, I got generous and I donated money to a no-kill cat shelter. And then, like, they were nice to me until I gave them the money. And then I contacted them and I go, I'd like to do a comedy show somewhere and donate 100%.
Yeah.
Get fucking Rogan, get. Yeah. You know, and they were like, basically, we really don't appreciate your style of comedy or you as a human or some shit.
Oh, my God, that's hurtful.
I laughed. Listen, we teach honesty here on the church.
Yeah.
When somebody's honest with you, you can't get mad at them. We're in the church on that. You got any dates for me, cocksucker?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing Salt Lake City Thanksgiving weekend at Wise Guys.
Okay.
I'm going to re-record a CD. What is it? November 11th, and the second Tuesday of November in the Belly Room, then Salt Lake City, and then I have Rick Bronson's House of Comedy in Scottsdale first weekend of December. Then I have the Comedy Works South the second weekend of December.
Beautiful. So I have nothing coming up. New Jersey sold out, so all I got is the Motor City Casino on the 7th. Detroit, we're fucking coming. And on the 8th and 9th, the Funny Bone in Omaha. I can't fucking wait to see my girl. I love going to that club. When was the last time you went to Omaha?
It's been years. I loved it.
That's a great
club. Great comedy town.
She takes you to a great fucking place to eat, like home cooked, like everybody's fat. Everybody's got like diabetes at this restaurant. Their ankles are swollen. It's fucking tremendous. I love this place. Thank you very much for coming on and sharing your heartwarming story and your honesty. Listen, before we leave, again, the church is brought to you by my bookie. Listen, why pick winners if you ain't going to bet? That's why I go to my bookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. Let's face it, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on, right or wrong. If you're trying to bet on the NFL, baseball, MMA, PFL, whatever the fuck it is, my bookie's got it. I wouldn't be telling you guys to bet with them if they weren't the best. Do the smart thing. If you're going to bet football this season, bet with my bookie. You're just 2 weeks away from pro fucking basketball, and baseball playoffs are here. You can make a little money off the fucking Yankees or fucking the Washington Senators in the next couple days. Do you know you can bet games after the kickoff with my bookie? No, you didn't know. If by the second half it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always take the other side. Who does that? My bookie, that's who. If you're the type of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, then we try a little parlay. If all your picks come through, you multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is still the best time of the year. Why? Because I got college football. Why? Because I got pro basketball in the first month. The lines are soft. That's when you bet basketball the first month. The lines are soft. You got the NHL. You got NFL play. I mean, you got a plethora of fucking gambling. I think my bookie's got a site where you could bet on two fucking praying mantises in Hong Kong under a basement where the guards ain't hitting people with sticks and shit like that. Listen, they even got if all your picks come through, you multiply your winnings if you bet a parlay. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of the year. How many times am I going to say that? Anyway, what I'm trying to say to you is it's time to make some fucking geeters. If you go to mybookie.ag today, right now, we're going to double your first deposit. Use promo code CHURCH, C-H-U-R-C-H, to get 100% bonus on your initial deposit up to $1,000. Who does that for you? Nobody, bitch. So visit mybookie.ag today. That's mybookie.ag. And don't forget to use promo code CHURCH when creating your account to claim your bonus, all right? You play, you win, you get fucking paid. The church would also love to welcome, listen, you know me. When Lee was doing his 9 diets ago, when Lee did the vegetable fucking thing with the pickle juice and the fucking beets and shit, when he would come in here looking all sour, when he was drinking those milkshakes with the blender.
Juicing
the juice diet. Remember, his head got all nice and small. It looked like my cat Superbad's head. His head was nice and small back then. I remember him telling me one time what was in it, and I made kind of one at the house. and it tasted like, listen, after I drank it, I was like Chris Cornell. I was ready to hang myself. It was so fucking bad. But the church was brought to you.
Was this brought to you by?
It was terrible, by suicide prevention and juicing. Don't be fucking juicing. What we're talking about here is Athletic Greens. It's an awesome supplement that gives you a big dick swinging energy. Listen, if you're not starting your day off with a blast of vitamins, you already lost. Go back to bed, you fuck. You're useless to me. But if you want to feel tip-top Magoo, let Athletic Greens do the dirty work. They got you covered in five critical areas: health, energy, immunity, gut health, and hormonal support. The number one thing I loved about them when I drank it was the gut support, the gut health. Tremendous. You hear little noises and shit. You can hear little bugs disappearing from the inside of your systems when you eat that Mexican meat from a taco stand. It's got lice in it and shit. Who else takes care of you like that? Nobody. Athletic Greens does. In one scoop, you get 75, count them, 75 essential vitamins, minerals, probiotics, digestive enzymes, raw superfoods, mushrooms, and a whole foods. They got everything. No more pill bottles or trying to choke down a dozen apples. It's all in there. The best part is the powder comes in an easy-to-use travel pack. You got to see this. I love this, guys. When I'm on the road, you throw them in your bag, and you know you'll be protected. Drinking Athletic Greens is like a daily insurance policy between me and my body. It tastes delicious. I drink this, and then I can have a little fun. And you can relax because their ingredients, ready for this, are plant-based. So if you're like Lee on keto or like Lee gluten-free, you can take this. No chemicals, no artificial flavors, no artificial preservatives, no artificial sweeteners, no added sugar, no GMO herbicides, lactose, sucrose, dextrose, eggs, yeast, peanuts, or animal products. These guys got you covered. You need to take care of yourself. You need to be a good friend to yourself, and that's why I recommend supplements to everybody, and it's easy. You just add cold water, shake it up. You can take that banana and shove it up your ass. What are you waiting for? Members of the church family get a special offer, all right? 20 free travel packs valued at $79 with your first purchase. Do me a favor. Just check out athleticgreens.com. For right now, just go check them out. Read about them. See what you think. I'll tell you what. You're making a big mistake if you don't go with Athletic Greens. To get your travel packs today, go to athleticgreens.com/church. Athletic Greens. Fucking tremendous. I want to thank my bookie. I want to thank Athletic Greens. I want to thank CBD Lime. Most of all, I want to thank you motherfuckers. Remember, November 7th, Motor City Casino. Are you kidding me or what? And then the 8th and 9th, I'm in Omaha, Nebraska at the Funny Bone. I want to thank Steve Simone. I want to thank the Christ Killer. If you came to Denver, I fucking love you. If you came to Kansas City, I fucking love you. And if you're coming to Jersey, I fucking love you. Thanks for being sold out. I love you motherfuckers. Have a great Tuesday. Nobody could take dick from you. You got the church under your belt. Kick this fucking mule, Lee. What the fuck you think you're doing? These people don't know how I do it, though.
I'm going to get the Athletic Greens. Go to church.
I want to be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. Somebody twice as smart as I. A somebody who will swear to be true as you used to do with me. Who'll leave you to learn that misery loves company. Wait and see. I mean, I wanna be around to see how he does it when he breaks your heart to bits. Let's see if the puzzle fits so fine. And that's when I'll discover that revenge is sweet. As I sit there applauding from a front row seat when
when somebody breaks your heart like you.